You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Vikings. I am your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. You can find the show anywhere you find your favorite podcasts, like Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Himalaya, whatever you like. Or you can ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. Today's episode of Locked On Vikings is brought to you by Rock Auto. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all of the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them that Locked On sent you. And today, I have a couple of fun stories for you, and then we are going to kick off the Ultimate Division crossover, part two of this offseason. Earlier, like February in the offseason, all four of us Locked On NFC North hosts, so me, Lauren Cox of Locked On Bears, Peter Bukowski of Locked On Packers, and Matt Derry of Locked On Lions, all got into the same chat and talked about what the teams needed to do in the offseason and what we talked about. So we followed up on that now that free agency and the draft have all passed, although I think there is more free agency stuff that's going to happen. There are still guys like Jadeveon Clowney out there that are going to be signed. For the most part, free agency and the draft are done, and we kind of know what these rosters are going to look like headed into the season. So we all got into a chat again, and I got bullied over Nick Foles. It was really fun. So we got part one of that coming up today. We're talking about the Packers. The Vikings are on tomorrow, so if you only want to listen to the Vikings one, that is tomorrow's. But first, I want to take you to a small town about an hour outside New Orleans called Hammond, Louisiana, in about, I would probably guess, like 2003, 2004. There is a youth football league. Actually, no, it would have been more like 2007. But anyways, there is a youth football league, and this young, skinny kid gets absolutely hammered on his first day of practice. He gets hit a bunch. He doesn't like all the pain and the hurt. And the next day, his dad comes home from work and finds that his kid isn't at practice. And he says, "What's wrong? Why don't you want to do it?" And he says, "They were hitting too hard and I don't like it." And his dad had to kind of sit him down and have a little bit of a pep talk, is how it's described. And then a young Cameron Dantzler, having no idea how much influence this decision would have on the rest of his life, decided to head back to practice. And once he had come to grips with the physicality, he came to relish it. He ended up being a track and football star, so he was a really, really highly sought-after athlete. He played some safety to start in high school, and then he moved to cornerback, and then he actually played some QB, and ended up being kind of a multifaceted player. And there were a lot of recruiters that wanted to see him, but colleges had a bit of a tough time kind of figuring out what he was going to be. Eventually, he lands at Mississippi State, where they're going to move him to cornerback. And he spends the early parts of his time at Mississippi State the same way that, you know, usually people would. Redshirt your first year, be a backup, kind of a special teams kind of guy your second year. But in 2017, I believe his redshirt sophomore year, Mississippi State has to play Louisville in the Tax Slayer Bowl of 2017. So this is the Lamar Jackson Louisville Cardinals. And luckily for Cameron Dantzler, as he rotates into that game, Lamar Jackson has a miscommunication with his wide receiver and ends up firing a ball right into Cameron Dantzler's chest, and it ends up being this like huge point in a game where they would go on to beat Louisville, despite Lamar Jackson having one of the more prolific games of his college career, which is saying something. And from that point on, Cameron Dantzler becomes a starting cornerback through 2018 and 2019. He never gives up the job after that moment. And he kind of credits that interception and that, like, really big, high, you know, under the lights, in a bowl game, go make the play against a guy who would be the NFL MVP just 3 years later. This is, like, this huge, like, kind of turning point in his college career where he finally settles in. He's gone from this kind of chaotic, like, nobody really knows what to do with him athlete type to, I'm a cornerback. But there is the other thing about Cameron Dantzler, and it's kind of been the story that has plagued him throughout all of the pre-draft process, and right now, as we're trying to figure out if he's going to be good on the Vikings and all of that, is that he is skinny. He's had a high metabolism his whole life, and he actually would, like, in college and in high school, you know, he would out-eat the offensive lineman, but he wouldn't gain any weight. And, like, people would be like, oh my god, where do you put it all? It was that kind of thing, but he just has a high metabolism. And that's interesting, too, because that's always the thing that, like, we all know, eventually your metabolism slows down. Most of us learn that lesson the hard way. But he kind of learned to make that a part of his game, because he, I mean, try as he might to gain weight, it kind of was, running up against a brick wall. So he really learned to relish press coverage. And, you know, in press coverage, it's this very mano-a-mano thing. And I've talked a lot on this show about the mentality of cornerbacks and wide receivers and how that is really, like, there's a lot of swagger. There's a lot of, like, boisterous, testosterone-filled competitiveness in those two positions. And so when it comes time for press man, that's the time to, like, put that to the test. That is the Oklahoma drill for these guys, right? And so you stick 160-pound lanky cornerback over there, and he's got all the length in the world, right? But you stick a tiny little cornerback out there, and wide receivers are thinking, oh man, I'm going to run right through this guy and get a big giant touchdown. And he loves that people think that about him. He learns to relish that idea because he's good at press, and his press man technique is aces, probably because he had to compensate for the lack of size, and so out of necessity, he had to get really good at press man. To get to this point, a guy like that is going to be good at press man, right? And so bigger wide receivers, thinking they would, you know, run right through him, would get absolutely stonewalled in press. And that was kind of the moment for him to be able to, like, really take his own style of play by the reins and say, I do not look like the normal cornerback, but I'm going to be this good at it anyways. And sure enough, it leads him to get drafted in the third round. But even the pre-draft process of that got a little interesting because his combine was dreadful. He ran a 4.64, and he never really played as like a slow corner. It seems like his like on-field time he played, not like a quick one, but like an at least adequately, like it'll work kind of speed. And he shut down guys like Jamar Chase, you know, the superstar at LSU. He blames a hamstring, or I think a quad injury, for that issue, but as a lot of people have pointed out, and maybe I'll try to find this in the show notes, I talked about it at draft time, but Arif Hassan kind of did some digging, and it doesn't really make sense because he ran that 40 twice, so either he ran it the first time, tweaked his quad, and then ran it again, which would be wild, or he tweaked his quad on the second run and ran the first one, but it was just as slow, so you'd still have to explain it. Personally, I think he came in at about 190 at the combine, which is still really light, but it was much heavier than his actual playing weight. My theory is that he gained a whole bunch of bad weight and it totally tanked his combine. Either way, he's got a lot to prove. Even as a third round pick that's virtually guaranteed to make the roster, he has a lot to prove, especially in preseason and in his rookie season entirely. He'll compete with Holton Hill to be an outside corner. They're the two kind of tall corners, so they're going to be the guys that have to cover bigger players, guys like Allen Robinson or like Julio Jones. Maybe not Julio, maybe they'll just put whoever they think is best on Julio, but, you know, the big guy job is kind of on the line between Holton Hill and Cameron Dantzler, and could even be a rotation between the two, which would give Dantzler the chance he needs to prove that he can play at that tiny little weight, just like he proved at Mississippi State, but translating that to the NFL is going to be difficult. Now, before I go on to the next story that I have set for you today, I want to talk to you really quick about Rock Auto. Rock Auto is a website that you can go to, rockauto.com, for all of the car parts or truck parts that you could ever need. If your car has a problem and you need to order a part for it, go search Rock Auto. You can definitely save some money on there. Whether it's a battery or something that you need because you're like some black thumb that loves to work on this kind of stuff in your garage during COVID, just go onto the website, enter your make, your model, your year, and you will be able to browse through all the things you could ever possibly imagine needing. And they have to sell it at a discount because if they don't, you're just going to go to the brick and mortar store you've been going to for 30 years. So head on over to rockauto.com, and when you check out, I would just love it if you told them that Locked On sent you. After Penny Hardaway retired from his 15-year NBA career, he looked to make an AAU franchise. That's the Amateur Athletics Union, and a lot of times it is made of like middle schoolers and high schoolers. It's kind of a extracurricular, non-school-based option for kids to get a little bit of run. He was going around and scouting out for this in the Tennessee area, and he came across this kid that had this really unique play style. He would kind of go one way really hard, and he would kind of stop on a dime, and he would like create space and get really unique shots that way. And it reminded him a lot of the way that wide receivers run routes in football. Sure enough, the kid also played football, and when it was time to go and watch him play football, he took to being a wide receiver really, really naturally. And from that point on, Penny Hardaway not only put Dillon Mitchell on his AAU team, And he was a superstar on that, by the way. But even as Penny Hardaway watched Dylan Mitchell play in high school, he noticed that same dynamicism and that ability to create separation. And like a lot of tight ends, you know, he talks about basketball being this really, really helpful, formative thing for him being good at football. You know, you learn how to box out, you learn how to space yourself, you learn how to kind of position yourself for the ball. And that is this really helpful thing for him that comes into play when he goes to Oregon. There's also this really cute anecdote of him on the circuit with Penny Hardaway telling him, you know, you got to be less selfless. You got to be a little more selfish about it. He would have this thing where he would juke somebody out of their shoes and then set up this perfect, beautiful shot at, you know, 5 foot, you know, gimme jumper, and he would pass the ball and he like wouldn't take it because he wanted to be like a team player, which is such a cute anecdote now that of course you're going to tell every recruiter, right? But now that he's at Oregon, he meets his next mentor, whose name is Darren Carrington. And I know there's a few of you Ducks fans out there, that name might make you shudder, but he really takes Dylan Mitchell along at his time there. And the first season Dylan Mitchell is there is not a great one for Oregon. It's like the season right after the Mariota years end, and they kind of fall apart right away. But they really grow close, and Carrington is like a big brother to Dylan Mitchell, showing him the ropes, showing him, kind of helping him along through that infamous transition between high school sports, where it is a secondary thing, and really school is what's important, and, you know, it's kind of an after-school activity, to college sports, where it is blood, sweat, and tears. You eat it, you breathe it, and Carrington really helps him through that transition, a transition that a lot of other guys tend to struggle with. That's why they always get like redshirted all the time, like Cameron Dantzler getting redshirted, especially because he was little. But then the next summer, the summer before the 2017 season, Darren Carrington, who was supposed to be kind of the guy for Oregon, gets DUI and gets kicked off the team. And that's kind of a double-edged sword for Dylan Mitchell, who now loses his mentor and a very good friend, is no longer going to be on the team. But that does kind of create an opening. And from that moment on, Dylan Mitchell is like kind of a star for the Oregon Ducks. And he takes that opportunity and he runs with it. 2017, he's part of the rotation. He isn't like the star yet, but he's definitely like a starting wide receiver, has a reasonable season. 2018, he absolutely explodes, has a record-breaking season for Oregon. He and Justin Herbert, now a Charger, put together this unbelievable campaign, and he enters the end of that season with all the momentum in the world. So you just broke a school record at a pretty big school, right? Oregon's a good program, and you still have a year of eligibility, but you could forego it and go out for the NFL draft. And that is exactly what Dylan Mitchell does. He says, listen, I'm at the top of my game right now. I'm coming off a white hot season. Let's do this. I'm going out to the NFL. And to his credit, people tell him, oh, you could be a second or third rounder, right? Like, you're this dynamic wide receiver. You've got all this great experience, these accolades, you know, go out and do it. But he ends up, you know, day one passes, probably not going to be taken day one. Day two passes, and he's like, oh, man, maybe I'm at the top of the list. And he ends up falling all the way to the seventh round, to the point where he stopped watching. He and his girlfriend were watching a Sherlock movie when he got the call from the Vikings that they were going to draft him. And that is a humbling experience for anybody. And even more humbling, he goes through that whole training camp, and the guy that was drafted a few spots after him, Olabisi Johnson, ends up ascending to that third wide receiver spot, and eventually wide receiver two when Adam Thielen gets hurt. Dylan Mitchell never cracks the roster. He's the only member of that entire 2019 draft class that doesn't end up cracking the roster in any capacity at any point. Even Cameron Smith, who didn't make it, ends up on the roster eventually due to some injuries and some practice squad shuffling shenanigans. So that brings us to 2020, where Dylan Mitchell now is, he was on the practice squad, he signed a futures deal, he gets to come back and try again, but how do you crack this roster? Of course, you know, there's no Diggs, but there's a Justin Jefferson. You're definitely not going to overcome Olabisi Johnson, because even if he has a bad preseason, his 2019 season, I mean, he's going to make the team, right? And you've got guys like Tashae Sharpe in the building now, plus a lot of the guys that you lost out to in the first place, like Chad Beebe. So there is quite a bit of a chip on Dylan Mitchell's shoulder now, I would imagine, because he is somebody that has been this absolutely dynamic athlete that has just toasted people at every facet of his career, all the way from being this really weird, like, quick-stepping basketball player discovered by Penny Hardaway, of all people, to a multifaceted high school athlete playing football and track, all the way to a record-breaking Oregon wide receiver, and now he can't crack an NFL roster. So the intrigue here is this it for Dylan Mitchell? Is this as far as his ability will take him, or is there another gear in this kit? That's one of the things that I always get super excited to see if we do have a preseason in that preseason. So now I'm going to step away in a little bit, and when we come back, I will be joined by Peter Bukowski, Lauren Cox, and Matt Derry of all of the other Locked On NFC North shows, and we're going to talk about the future of the Green Bay Packers. And I get to make fun of their draft a whole bunch, so get excited for that.
It is another edition of the Locked On Podcast Network NFC North Division Crossover. We're back, guys, and a lot has happened for the Green Bay Packers over the last few months. I don't know if you heard what happened in the draft or what didn't happen in the draft. That's certainly something that we will get to. The Packers didn't add a receiver, despite the fact that everyone thought that they would, although Devin Funchess, I suppose, counts. Didn't add a frontline receiver. Replaced Brian Bulaga with Rick Wagner, replaced Blake Martinez with Christian Kirksey, and I don't think are necessarily a fundamentally more talented team than they were last year. That's how I want to start this discussion, and I want to start with Locked On Vikings and Luke Braun, because Luke, last year I went into the season believing that the Vikings were the most talented team in the NFC North. And that didn't mean that I thought they were necessarily going to win, but I thought they were the most talented, given what's happened this offseason for both of the teams that we cover. Do you think that is still the case? Because I think it's a lot closer as we stand here in July than it was July of last year.
Closer at least, right? If not, maybe a tie, or even maybe the Vikings have kind of sunk. And you know, we'll talk about it in a couple days about, or I guess tomorrow, about the Vikings, but the Vikings definitely had an offseason that I think left their roster in worse shape than it was at this time last year. And it seems like, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but it seems like the Packers have basically spun their wheels. They've traded out one guy for another that can be seen as maybe a wash, maybe a little better, maybe a little worse, but it doesn't seem like there's been, you know, a big piece added. I mean, the big add of the offseason isn't going to play this year. Maybe won't even play next year in Jordan Love. And the next two big rookies are both running backs who, again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think are very big in like helping Aaron Rodgers in the passing game. So it seems like you're going to go into another season running back the formula of Aaron Rodgers, Devontae Adams, and just force him a million targets and see if anybody can beat that. And to the Packers' credit, that went 13-3. So maybe that is a formula that they do feel confident in running back, but it does seem like the Packers are kind of running it back and saying, listen, last year went well, let's try that again.
Yeah, I'm with you. They are definitely spinning their wheels in that way. And they have to hope that some of the stuff that went right for them last year, some of the close game wins and those kinds of things are replicable. Generally speaking, NFL history says that they aren't. So I think it's an interesting strategy. They're hoping, I think, a lot of the year two improvement in Matt LaFleur's offense. Then you see year two of Za'Darius Smith, Preston Smith, Adrian Amos in this defense. That helps bolster this defense a little bit more in 2020. And speaking of Adrian Amos, let's talk to Lauren, because that's my favorite thing to talk about. I'm not going to ask you about Adrian Amos, but the Bears addressed their biggest position of need at the quarterback position. Do you feel like, I mean, you and I talked before the season last year, and I said I felt like the Packers could be as good as the Bears, but the Bears were better until we saw it, until the Bears proved otherwise. I feel like we're now the flip side of that. Do you think that's fair? Because I do think the Bears are still a good team.
Yeah, I think there's some proving that needs to be done, some reproving for sure, that, you know, it feels like the Bears are trying to do, they're not trying to reinvent the wheel here with what they do as a team on both sides of the ball. They kind of feel like a lot went wrong last season, and if they could just kind of flip a switch and almost do it all over again, but do it slightly differently, but with a lot of the same guys, I think they feel like the pieces are there, that just the execution for whatever reason wasn't. So, you know, when you add Nick Foles in with Mitch Trubisky, the idea is to get one of them to play a consistent quarterbacking through a full season. But, you know, like when I think back to those Packers games, both of them that the Bears played against them last season, the Bears ended up having to pretty much go to the all Trubisky offense. I think he had 45 and 55 pass attempts in those two games. They just couldn't do anything but throw. And is it going to be Nick Foles in those same shoes? And are you going to have a different result? I don't know. It feels like not only do you need better quarterback play, but you're going to need some better support around them, especially offensively, but even the defense continuing to kind of do its thing before we really see any change from what we saw last season, which kind of, like you said, was a good team, but not a great team. And I don't know what's necessarily supposed to be the big difference maker for them this season when you talk about catching up to the Green Bay Packers.
So speaking of catching up, Matt, I hate to do this to you, but it's just the position that the Lions find themselves in. And I'm actually more bullish on the Lions this year than I was last year. I went on your radio show the other day and talked about Darius Slay's comments, Davante Adams' comments on Matt Patricia's defense, Paul Pasqualoni's defense, depending on who you ask, depending on which Twitter avatar is in your mentions. And I'm just wondering, you know, when you look at how well the Lions have played the Packers over the last few years, you know, there's this question about, oh, do the Lions need to change their defense if teams know what's coming? It doesn't seem like the Lions need to do much anything differently against the Packers because they've matched up well with them the last few years.
Yeah, it's certainly been very, very interesting to watch how the Lions went from, we can never win in Green Bay.
Right.
We can never win at County Stadium. Right. To all of a sudden they win there one time and now they own the place. And last year's game at Lambeau obviously was a highly discussed game that the Lions fans, even me, thought was taken from them by the officials and some really horrific calls on Trey Flowers and the hands to the face routine. But of course they did need to get a stop at the end of that game and couldn't do it. And it was the Alan Lazard coming out party game. In Detroit now, there are fans, and I'm not one of them, that believe that the Packers will come back down to earth at 13 wins, no way that happens again, and that it's the Lions and Vikings to play for this division this year, and that Green Bay will have this serious come down. And I'm not ready to endorse that just yet. I do think the Lions have had a good offseason. But you still look at what Green Bay has defensively, and you look at some of those lists that are done in the offseason, like Pete Prisco's top 100, and you see 7 Vikings and 6 Packers. And then you go, how many Lions? 0. You know, Galladay's on the could be mentioned list, you know, the honorable mentions. Green Bay still has playmakers on that defense and guys up front. You know, if you put a Kenny Clark on the Lions, that changes everything. Mm-hmm. He's exactly what they need. Same with the cornerback. Why is his name escaping me right now? You're very good.
Jair Alexander.
Yeah. Jair Alexander, you put him on the Lions. Now we're talking, but the Lions don't have that. So I'm not ready yet to say that the Lions are going to pass the Packers just yet. I do think Detroit is better. I'm still, and we've talked about this, Pete. I don't know what Green Bay did in the draft. I didn't think it made any sense. but that's what kind of makes this exciting.
So I have a question for the group here. Does anyone think heading into the season, Green Bay is the best team in the NFC North?
Yes.
I would say no. I still think it's the Vikings.
I think it's kind of like you said with the Bears last season, Peter, where it's the Packers until they prove us otherwise. I think we all kind of think they overachieved last season, but that doesn't mean they can't still be the best team in the division, even if it's not quite as stellar as they were last year.
Yeah, I think that they had, I mean, getting Devin Funchess will definitely help. But I think that they're just leaning on the formula that took them to 13-3 last year. And I don't think any other team in the NFC North had a good enough offseason to be like, no, now we are the Kings and we are the challengers. I think that there is a lot of room for different outcomes. But I think the Packers are the odds on betting favorite. And I don't think that that's like a slight on anyone. I don't think anybody's disrespected by that or like incorrectly evaluated by that. The fact remains that the Packers have a reliable quarterback and all the other quarterbacks in this division are talented. Kirk Cousins and Matt Stafford have their talents and their strengths, but they also have their inconsistencies. And I think while Aaron Rodgers has plenty of his own flaws with like depth of target and throwaways and stuff like that, there is this Aaron Rodgers, Davante Adams thing is going to be formidable and nobody could figure it out last year. So I agree with Lauren. I think that if somebody proves it, then it will remain proven. But I think that somebody they are the team to beat until proven otherwise.
No mention of Nick Foles there, Lucas. Wow.
I am still hurt by him, and I would appreciate it if you didn't use his name around me. It still hurts.
So I want to finish up with this question, because I'm fascinated by the answers that you all just gave. But as I look around this division, I see a lot of teams, including in some ways the Lions, that think they can compete right now, given, you know, the draft that the Vikings just had, you know, the talent that the Lions have accrued, and obviously the long-term play the Packers made in the draft. If we have this conversation 3, 4, 5 years from now, who do you think is going to be the team that is in the catbird seat here?
Well, I mean, I'm supposed to be a homer and say the Lions are, you know, they've somehow found a way with new ownership, albeit the owner's wife's daughter now taking over. But I I'm not stroking Lucas here. The Vikings to me have an identity, and with that tough defense and that run game and the play action passing game. And I know Stefanski's gone, and that might hurt, but I still think that's the team to beat. I still think that's the best team that with the identity and what Mike Zimmer's doing. But again, you're right. It, you know, losing Stephon Diggs and some other things, maybe they do take a step back, but that's the team that I think I look at as being the best, at least right now, and maybe even down the road too.
And, you know, it's interesting
talent base.
It's interesting that with all of the criticism that the Packers received for drafting Jordan Love this offseason, as I look across these rosters, the Packers are the only one with a long-term plan at quarterback. Like, who knows how many more years Stafford has left. You know, Kirk Cousins' contract situation has a few more years on it, and then there's some uncertainty long-term there. The Bears sure as heck don't have a long-term quarterback plan, and all of a sudden, the Packers are the only one that
they might not have a short-term quarterback plan.
Yeah, but the Packers are the only one that can say, yeah, we've got at least something on the roster and ready to go if and when Aaron Rodgers is ready to hang it up.
It is interesting in, like, the way that long-term sets up, too, because if you look at, like, the front office configurations of all of these teams 5 years from now, will the Vikings still have the same coach and GM? You know, will the Bears still have the same coach and GM and all that? And for the Vikings, who have had the same configuration for a while, it really will take 1 6-10 season for them to decide to blow everything up. So even if they have an identity right now, if 2022 goes south because of Kirk Cousins' $45 million cap hit, then they could end up blowing it up. So when you ask the question of 5 years from now, I have no idea what the division could look like 5 years from now. But I think the team that's probably most likely to have consistency there, I would say probably the Vikings or the Packers, just because I know the Vikings owners very well, and the Vikings owners, the Wilfs, like, value consistency a lot. They want to run their franchise like the Steelers. And I think that the Packers kind of run in a similar way, even though that they just changed their GM not too long ago and all that, but I think that they'll have that consistency. So I would go with Vikings or Packers in terms of, like, the brightest future, just by way of, like, odds of consistency.
Yeah, I think that's how I would lean as well. And Matt, as I finish up here, I do think it was wrong that Kenny Golladay was not on that list. He's really good, and I don't think enough people think that Kenny Golladay is a top 100 player, because he is absolutely one of the best receivers in football. That is something we will talk about later in the week when Matt gets his chance to be in front of the microphone. In like I am now, I guess we're all in front of microphones, but this is my team, so I get to be in charge, and that's over. We're done with that, because tomorrow Luke gets to take the reins. We talk about the Vikings, and the Locked On Podcast Network NFC North crossover continues.
Thank you guys so much for hanging out and listening to this episode of Locked On Vikings. You heard Peter right. Tomorrow we'll be back. We'll be talking about this glorious meme team. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. You can find the show anywhere you find your favorite podcasts, like Spotify, Google Podcasts, Himalaya, whatever you like. Or you can ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. I'll see y'all tomorrow. And as always, Skol.